From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
Parkinson's disease is one of the most common conditions that affects older adults. It's a neurological disease that develops as a result of the death of brain cells in certain parts of the brain. And symptoms of Parkinson's disease vary from person to person and can include shaking of the arms, legs, or the head, can include a shuffling of the gait or not picking up your feet when you walk. But some people who have Parkinson's disease have stiffness in their legs, tightness and cramping in their arms and legs, and so the mix of symptoms can differ from person to person.
Dr. Allison Willis, MD, Assistant Professor of Neurology and Epidemiology at the University of Pennsylvania, and lead author of a study on differences in treatment for Parkinson's disease. In her study, Dr. Willis found that African Americans with Parkinson's disease are less likely than whites with the disease to receive deep brain stimulation surgery to reduce tremors. Parkinson's disease affects more than 2 million Americans. Deep brain stimulation surgery has been shown to be effective but involve extensive preoperative testing and may include costs not covered by many insurance plans, including Medicare. The study examined the cases of 8,420 patients who received deep brain stimulation surgery. While 5.5% of all Parkinson's disease patients were African Americans, only 1% of the patients who received deep brain stimulation surgery were African American. I'm Johnny O. Hanson, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, Disparities in the Treatment of Parkinson's Disease, with Dr. Allison Willis, MD, In Black America.
I was trying to ascertain, in addition to seeing if there was disparity or a difference in how often certain types of people were getting DBS, in addition to that, I was also interested in seeing if there were certain types of physician practices that had better success with getting DBS for patients as opposed to others. And by that I mean this. If you are a hardworking, well-trained physician who is in a neighborhood that doesn't have great access to preoperative testing, if you are not in a physician referral network where you can easily get your patients in to see specialists who perform these types of surgeries, you may know that this is an appropriate surgery, but it may be impossible to actually get the surgery for your patients.
According to the National Parkinson Foundation, 5 to 60,000 new cases of PD are diagnosed each year, adding to the 1 million people who currently have PD. Most people who get the disease are older than 60, but about 15% are diagnosed before age 50. Although doctors don't know what exactly causes Parkinson's, they believe it is caused by a combination of genetic and environmental factors. For example, in about 5 to 10% of patients, there is a strong family history of the disease. The first sign of Parkinson's disease is usually a tremor in one hand, but over time, people with the condition find it harder to move. In a study recently conducted by Dr. Allison Willis, MD, at the University of Pennsylvania, she found widespread disparities among Parkinson patients that are restricting equal utilization of evidence-based care, limiting patients' quality of life, and increasing sociological and healthcare costs. Efforts to overcome these disparities through policy or reimbursement changes can benefit socioeconomically disadvantaged patients with Parkinson's disease.
There were no other physicians in my family, and as a matter of fact, I didn't actually meet another black physician until I was in college.
What?
Yeah. And so I didn't have any role models from a professional standpoint, but I did come from a family that loved learning and loved to read and encouraged all of us to go as far as we could in school and to find something about which we were passionate. And I also came from a family that encouraged us to use whatever talents we were given, whatever they may be, to make the world a better place. And so for me, it's been medicine and research.
I guess the gods or the stars were all aligned when I ran across your study. Prior to that, I think a couple of days, blackdoctors.org had an article on Muhammad Ali and his Parkinson's disease, and then your study came up. Tell our audience, what is Parkinson's disease?
Parkinson's disease is one of the most common conditions that affects older adults. It's a neurological disease that develops as a result of the death of brain cells in certain parts of the brain. And symptoms of Parkinson's disease vary from person to person and can include shaking of the arms, legs, or the head, can include a shuffling of the gait or not picking up your feet when you walk. But some people who have Parkinson's disease have stiffness in their legs, tightness and cramping in their arms and legs. And so the mix of symptoms can differ from person to person.
Has there been any definitive causes of PD?
That's a great question. We have invested a lot of public funds in looking for the cause of Parkinson's disease. But to date, we haven't found what causes Parkinson's disease. But we do know that some people are less likely to get it. And hopefully future research will delve into figuring out why some people are less likely to get it. For example, we know that women are less likely to be diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And we know that African Americans and Asian Americans and people with that ancestry in their family are also less likely to be diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And we're not quite sure if that's because it doesn't come to attention or because there's actually some protection from that disease that's inherited or passed down from generation to generation. We think that it will probably be a mix of the two because African and Asian Americans are tenfold less likely to get diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And that big of a gap is probably too big for just it not being noticed at the doctors.
In my research and some of the causes, or maybe some of the causes, toxins, viruses, some may have said head traumas since Muhammad Ali was a professional prize fighter, and then structural problems. Are those particular causes being considered?
Yes, some of the causes that are being considered are being exposed to certain chemicals like pesticides, but that's usually only if you applied pesticides for a living. There's some evidence that being exposed to certain heavy metals can increase your risk of Parkinson's disease. There are some papers that suggest that having repeated head trauma can predispose to Parkinson's disease, but we really haven't found a smoking gun. And what is likely when we figure this puzzle out is that we will have found that certain people inherit a risk for Parkinson's disease and an environmental exposure is the match that lights the fire.
I understand. If you're just joining us, you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio, and I'm Johnny O. Hansen, Jr., and we're speaking with Dr. Allison Willis, M.D., assistant professor at the University of Pennsylvania and lead author of the study on disparities in the treatment for Parkinson's disease. Dr. Willis, what led you all to study disparities in deep brain stimulation surgery?
Well, my training and interest are in healthcare outcomes in Parkinson's disease and in disparities in neurological diseases. I'm a neurologist and a Parkinson's disease expert by clinical training, but my research training is in analytical epidemiology and health services research, which means that I look at how people receive healthcare and try to figure out what's the best treatment at the best time for each person, recognizing that everyone is different.
Mm-hmm.
And so we knew that African Americans were less likely to get specialty care, meaning they were less likely to see a clinical expert in Parkinson's disease compared to whites, and that women were less likely to see a specialist for Parkinson's disease compared to men. And I wondered if that extended to state-of-the-art care. Deep brain stimulation is really the state-of-the-art treatment for advanced Parkinson's disease when oral medications have begun to fail. Oral medications begin to fail after 5 to 10 years of having the disease, mostly because the disease has progressed and the brain can't process the medications effectively anymore. So at that time, in that case, it's appropriate and often very helpful for a person to have a surgery in which very small wires are placed in the part of the brain that talks to the part of the brain that's affected by Parkinson's disease. And doing so restores the function that was there before the medication stopped working as well. It is a treatment that has been proven in study after study. It is safe, it is effective, it's covered by Medicare, and yet it's not used very often in African Americans or women or people who are on fixed incomes.
I understand. With my limited knowledge, and I'm glad I took biology in reading through the results and the study itself, who made up the study population and for what length of time?
The study population consisted of all Americans who have Medicare insurance over the age of 65. So Medicare is provided to everyone over the age of 65, and everyone receives Part A insurance, which is hospital insurance. And since this is a procedure that is billable in the Part A component of Medicare, we were able to get the records of every individual who'd had this procedure done as part of Medicare billing and claims. And so we had over 1 million Parkinson's disease cases to examine, and we were able to extract every single one of those who had deep brain stimulation surgery and then look at how often they were African American or older or came from a poor neighborhood or were seeing a certain kind of physician.
And that has to do with, when you talk about the neighborhood socioeconomic status, when you all, I guess, logged them by zip codes?
Yes. So we used zip codes to get a picture of the neighborhood where each Medicare beneficiary lived. And we were able to look at how often a treatment that is covered by Medicare was provided for people based on where they lived. And we found two important things. We found that in spite of this being something that's covered by Medicare, that's covered by the insurance that you earned when you paid into those programs as a working citizen or earned as a result of disability, if you are in a low socioeconomic status neighborhood, you are much less likely to get it. One of the reasons that we think that is the out-of-pocket costs. Mm-hmm. So going to the doctor when you have deep brain stimulation, you get charged copays for services. Everyone knows that you get those extra bills after a test that your physician has ordered, even when you have insurance, even when you have Medicare, even when you have a Medicare supplement. And if you think about the mean income in those lower socioeconomic status neighborhoods, those out-of-pocket costs for DBS can be one-tenth of your mean income, which is not achievable for many seniors in those areas. So one of the reasons why you would see a gradient of use across socioeconomic strata is because of the out-of-pocket costs. Another reason could be that people in those neighborhoods aren't seeing doctors who refer any of their patients for state-of-the-art care.
Okay.
And we also found some evidence of that.
When you mentioned the zip code, it didn't matter what ethnicity you were, male or female, if that zip code popped up and you're at a lower economic level, then you weren't going to receive that type of suggestion for treatment, correct?
That is correct. Socioeconomic status was the great equalizer. Race, gender, age, the other health problems you also had did not matter as much as where you lived.
When you set your hypothesis in motion, what are some of the other things that you were trying to ascertain?
I was trying to ascertain, in addition to seeing if there was disparity or a difference in how often certain types of people were getting DBS. In addition to that, I was also interested in seeing if there were certain types of physician practices that had better success with getting DBS for patients as opposed to others.
Mm-hmm.
And by that I mean this. If you are a hardworking, well-trained physician who is in a neighborhood that doesn't have great access to preoperative testing, if you are not in a physician referral network where you can easily get your patients in to see specialists who perform these types of surgeries, you may know that this is an appropriate surgery, but it may be impossible to actually get the surgery for your patients.
I understand. When you look at the healthcare system and you look at physicians who are treating a minority population, are these types of conversations not taking place simply because of the cost?
We don't know the answer to that yet, but that is certainly one of the questions that we need to ask based on this preliminary data. So when we see that certain types of physician practices are not referring any of their patients for DBS or not achieving DBS for any of their patients, regardless of what the individual patient looks like, we have to wonder what kinds of barriers exist. Is it a barrier on the physician side, not knowing about the surgery that we could make better with education? Is it a barrier on the community side? Is there a barrier on the patient side where they generally wouldn't want a surgery that involves putting something in their brain? And these are all areas that we need to examine because they're all areas that could be intervened upon in order to improve outcomes for people who aren't getting state-of-the-art care.
I understand. When one is approached, particularly a minority is approached about the possibility of this type of surgery, are there apprehensions on the part of minorities when they are able to select this type of treatment?
As a practicing Parkinsonologist, I can say that yes, there are.
Okay.
And, you know, there are lots of reasons for apprehension in some cultures versus
exactly.
others over receiving medical care, and we know historically about apprehension, justifiable apprehension that African Americans may have, but those barriers exist in other minority communities and other cultures as well. And what we need to consider is whether we are approaching the discussion in a way that's culturally sensitive. And if the approach is what is causing the barrier rather than the surgery or the treatment itself. So those are things that we are gearing up to study in what I hope will be the largest prospective study of minorities with Parkinson's disease in the country. And those are going to be some of the patient-centered questions that we ask about the doctor-patient relationship, about the patient perception of Parkinson's disease and treatment for it, and whether there's a connection that is viable between the neurologist and the patient in the management of their Parkinson's disease, or whether there are some barriers that we can work to improve.
Were there any limitations to you all's study design?
Yes. Whenever you are using secondary data like insurance claims or medical records or blood samples to ask a question about disease occurrence or treatment patterns, there's always a risk that you get incorrect information.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a risk that, in this case, that people were offered Parkinson's disease treatment with DBS and they refused. That's not something that would be recorded in this kind of data set. But those are certainly things that we can assess with the appropriate follow-up study, which will be a prospective study of people with Parkinson's disease, where we actually sit down and have those conversations about what's going on.
With you all's study being published, how likely, hopefully in the future, when one has relatives or parents with Parkinson's disease, that they can have these type of conversations with their loved ones, but also with the physicians who are treating them?
I would hope that this kind of research would lead to this conversation happening every time, that this type of conversation happening at almost every visit. I would hope that this kind of data leads to research that would allow for a better understanding of why African Americans get Parkinson's disease less often.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's going to require African Americans with Parkinson's disease joining in the follow-up study so we can inform basic science about why they may be less likely, why we're protected from this neurodegenerative condition.
Any information on the cost of this treatment and how Medicare can assist in having this more affordable to more people?
That's a great question. A natural policy implication for this kind of study would be to examine what kind of supplementation, as you mentioned, or what kind of assistance would be necessary to even the playing field out. And that's assuming that everyone who is offered this treatment gets it. If we find that it's offered consistently across race and socioeconomic strata and is just not received the same across those categories, then that's one thing. But this may be an opportunity for supplemental funding from Medicare or insurance. In the same way that hemodialysis has been made available, this may be an opportunity to improve access and improve utilization by removing a barrier to state-of-the-art care.
One will have an idea of wanting to study whatever, but I would assume that some type of institution has to sign off on the study to validate it. Who signed off on you all's study?
Well, this was a study that was performed while I was an assistant professor of neurology at Washington University in St. Louis, where I still hold an adjunct appointment. And the manuscript and the publication were completed while I, after joining the faculty of neurology and epidemiology at the University of Pennsylvania, and the co-authors on this study are from several universities, so you could say we have a lot of people who had to sign off on this.
And how long did the study take place once you all have done the research? You said it was from 2007 to 2009, if I'm correct?
Right. The data is from 2007 through 2009. Analyzing the data and writing up the results took about a year from beginning to end.
And it was some 8,400 patients that you all looked at and examined during the study?
Yes.
And what percentage of the population, well, what percentage of the different races were a part of the study?
So we were able to get all of the data. We were able to include all of the Medicare beneficiaries in the country who have a diagnosis of Parkinson's disease.
Okay.
And that's almost 2% of the population over the age of 65 that has Medicare insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Within the Parkinson's disease population, approximately 90% of people diagnosed with Parkinson's disease are white. And the second most common race or ethnicity is African-American at about 5%. So there are reasons that we need to understand that explain why whites are so much more likely to be targeted with this disease, why African-Americans and other minorities are protected from this neurodegenerative disease.
When you looked at the study or outside of the study, were there obviously disparities in the deep brain stimulation, but overall the treatment of Parkinson's disease across the board for all Americans? Was there a disparity there outside of the deep brain stimulation surgery?
Yes, one of my colleagues at the University of Pennsylvania, Dr. Nabila Dadwala, has examined Medicaid beneficiaries, and she found that among Medicaid beneficiaries diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, African Americans were much less likely than white Americans to receive standard initial therapy for Parkinson's disease, which is either physical therapy or medication that helps to treat the symptoms after being diagnosed with disease. And again, we don't know whether medication treatment was offered, but the patient chose to wait on receiving that medication at that time, or whether medication wasn't even offered. And this prospective study will be able to answer that question as well. So there are lots of differences in the treatment for Parkinson's disease between whites and non-whites, and we have our work cut out for us figuring out why.
How has the Carcinogen Promorbidity Index score affected you all's findings?
The Charleston Comorbidity Score is a number that most epidemiology and outcome numbers use. And it's a score that allows you to adjust for how sick someone is from other diseases. Mm-hmm. For example, DBS, being a surgical procedure, has risks of anesthesia and has risks of the stress of a surgery. So if you were a person who had very bad heart failure, okay, or if you'd had a very severe stroke, your physician may not think it was the safest choice to offer you deep brain stimulation surgery. So adjusting for things that make you sicker at baseline allowed us to get a better look at how surgery is offered in a way that's not driven by how sick you are at baseline. So it helps us to remove the bias of certain groups or certain people being too sick to get the surgery, which would be an appropriate reason for there to be a difference between one group and another.
Dr. Allison Willis, MD, Assistant Professor of Neurology and Epidemiology at the University of Pennsylvania, and lead author of a study on differences in treatment for Parkinson's disease. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to your future In Black America programs, email us at jhanson, H-A-N-S-O-N, at KUT.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at KUT.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O. Hansen, Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.